God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Greed's not good and God's not dead. I don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic, and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Less Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Less Visible.
I got to put enthusiasm and optimism and all the love I can muster into that, because these are the times that demand it. The worse it gets, the more optimistic I'm going to be, try to be, because the alternative is unacceptable. The dog poet is hovering over Taiji, Japan this evening and thinking about all the dolphins, baby dolphins, and outward extending to all the fish hauled into boats with their... Then they cut their fins off and then dump them back into the water. If you haven't seen that magnificent movie, The Cove, I recommend it. I'm not criticizing the Japanese people, because people are people, and I can find the same things about differently abled about most groups of people. Excuse me. If I want to go looking for flaws, but it does say something about karmic possibilities. Most people don't know what dolphins symbolize and what they are. We owe them a great deal, but we owe a great deal to many sources that we don't recognize or acknowledge. We don't thank the elementals that make all of nature what it is, and which we hack and burn without even knowing their private places, and how we drive them away further and further with our clatter and ambitions, but mostly with the force of our negative emotions. We've made ourselves so insensitive that we can no longer understand what the birds are saying or the animals in the woods. We can't tune into the plants dreaming or the unconscious, yet feeling state of the very rocks in the mountains. We no longer have contact with extraordinary beings who have fled into the most inaccessible locations because of our ravenous hungers and bent perspectives. Some of us don't have the charity of beasts, nor their justifications for what they do. Some of us do things that conscience would not tolerate, so they buried it in a nameless grave. Mark Twain wrote a beautiful piece about murdering the conscience. He was pretty plugged in, as was Emerson and all the other exceptional souls who wander in and out of the meaningless pursuits and acquisitions of the general dreaming state. I don't blame the human race any more than I specifically blame the Japanese or anyone for the things I hear about that I know are wrong. Jesus summed it up best with, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." Let me be honest. I have blamed people, and I've gotten enraged at many things in the past, but it's pretty rare for me anymore. all my posts, beside the point, those aren't written with any particular passion. I just observe and shake my head or have no reaction at all. I recognize now that that is the way it is, and it's all karma. I thank my lucky stars, which have nothing to do with luck, that for all the hard highway I had to walk, that whatever guided me kept the main objective before my eyes, despite all the blandishments of the world, along with my own ignorance. Like the Muslims say, Allah Akbar, God is great. One thing I try to remember is the more I viscerally realize that God is forever beyond my comprehension, the more I realize that he's actually beyond my comprehension, and I fervently look forward to the moment I can truly surrender and let go without apprehension. I'm not allowed to yet. I want to, but I'm not yet permitted to. I have to say that twice with different words because it used to puzzle me why I couldn't advance in the direction I wanted to go. I couldn't understand why my shortcomings wouldn't go. No matter how much I pleaded and wanted to give them up, no matter how hard I tried to get around them or watch for the moment in order to catch them, consistency eluded me. Even today, with all of them greatly diminished, hardly a day goes by when I don't experience one of them rising up. A certain pressure has accompanied me through my life. It presses down on me, relentlessly at times, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. What direction am I supposed to go in? It never explains itself. It just presses. And only recently am I learning to Tai Chi it a bit. All kinds of things I used to know how to do are vanishing from me. Pieces of me are floating away. What am I supposed to do? Nothing but reach, seek deeper, and strive harder, and know that none of it will accomplish what I seek until the moment comes when it's permitted or allowed. I'm saying these things tonight from a personal aspect, autobiographical sort of a way, because I suspect I'm not the Lone Ranger. Interestingly, and possibly irrelevant, is the fact that I spent my first 5 years in Japan. That's where I had my first spiritual experience. I remember lying in my bed, I must have been about 6 months old, and I heard this noise filling the room, and I couldn't locate the source. I remember finally looking up at the rafters, and there were two rows of monks standing on opposite rafters chanting. They were about 6 inches high, or a foot or so, something like that. And it went on for a while. I didn't remember this until much later, probably because I had no context for it. I know that children have experiences like this often, but they forget them, blot them out. Life intrudes and changes them so much that there's no further reference point for it. One of the most powerful rewards that can come to a person is regenerated innocence. The opposite of that, and what most people achieve in its place, is senility. This is the reason that many masters are so childlike. They won the prize, and this is what we must shoot for. This is only one of the rewards. So many people think that the spiritual life is a life of denial, and they want no part of it. Or they make all kinds of compromises to ensure they get the best of both worlds. It doesn't work like that. You do get all things added unto you, but that comes once you've truly given all those things up. Then the supreme enjoyer can have his fun with you and through you. I can't say it emphatically enough. If we only knew what waited at the end of that struggle, where you pour your whole life into it, where you fail and get sidetracked and fall and fail over and over again, but get back up and keep on coming, when you know that failure is a part of the game and falling is part of the game, and you keep on coming, well, I think all of us would wholeheartedly pursue this to the exclusion of all else. There's a phrase in the Bible, I can't remember the exact words, but close enough for rock and roll. Eye has not seen, nor ears heard, nor can the mind comprehend what God has in store for those who love him. I believe that's true. I often make references to the Bible, although I am not a Christian in the classic sense, and certainly my practices are different than those of mainstream Christianity. My beliefs, I know for sure, are. I might be a Christian, but it seems that everything I've ever experienced spiritually is Eastern. Through all my psychedelic experiences, my meditations, and all the rest, the entities that I encountered were Eastern. And there was seldom anything that manifested otherwise, so I have to go with what I've encountered. I believe that all religions come out of their source in the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita and all of the earliest stuff that relies on the earlier stuff that relies on the earlier stuff. There's a particular lake out of which everything emerges, an ocean, if you will, and it has tributaries and rivers that run out of it, and they become, you know, particular selective expressions that are most adaptable to the particular cultures that celebrate them. But I believe, you know, you swim up any one of those tributaries, and eventually you're back in that ocean again, and know, where you hit the higher planes and they resolve into what you intrinsically are. Surely there are Christian and Muslim heavens. That cannot be doubted. Too many magnificent souls have borne witness to this. But they all resolve into something that is beyond all of these in the highest heavens. Shambhala is like that. And Shambhala is going to come to you this time. That's one of the perks of this rare moment in time. Don't disappoint yourself. In fact, all you have to do is focus on remembrance. Practice the presence. Remember. Forgetfulness is the dream of separation. Seek the unity which also brings you into accord with all things. It's that ancient and eternal harmony that you're looking for, that you need, and that you want to find. We spend our lives in aimless pursuits here on this planet, lives filled with frustration. We gain things that we desperately want, only to find that they lack the value we had placed in them. And our frustration and disappointment increases, because there's nothing here that grants happiness. It just doesn't do that. The whole point of it is to show you that unhappiness resides in all of these things, and to spur you, inspire you, to reach for something higher. And, my God, you know, if we could, well, then I suspect we would find out some things that we wanted to know, that would explain to us why we are in such states of desperation, and why we cloud our heavens with so much as stands between us and what we actually really want. You know, we take everything as a side trip. You know, we keep taking these exits off the highway, and next thing you know, you've lived an entire life at a rest stop somewhere. You know, and all the cities of experience, all the varieties and languages and cultures and places. You go dreaming off the highway, and the next thing you know, well, there was a short story at the back of that book by Hermann Hesse, Magister Ludi, where this fellow sits down to meditate by the side of a river, I think, and he went off into a life and lived an entire life, and then he woke from his meditation, and, well, there he was. It was like that, and I think it is like that. Grant yourself the opportunity to claim your divine heritage. Pull the mind and the heart back to the secret and the sacred waters of their source. Let the heart cleanse the mind. Renew the mind and experience heaven on earth before you go. Well, do it now. We are in a time of surrounding crisis. The world surrounds us, and the world is shaking off the false impressions of our destructive cultures. Nature's had enough of our gratuitous self-interest, and it's going to remind us who has the power. Nature is the active mode of the divine. Shakti. Innocence. That is how the divine expresses itself, through nature, and hopefully, ideally, through us. It saddens me sometimes that we cannot be all together in a common environment, sharing our meals, joining in song and celebration in our days and evenings, engaged in collective efforts, each in their abilities, bringing joy and prosperity to all. Well, I'm sure it would. There's just no telling what we could accomplish collectively, and I am determined to see that occur, or at least see it begin somewhere, somehow, someday. It's just like something that I feel I can see so clearly. And I know the proper individuals are around, all seeking the same thing. And also themselves understand the liberation and freedom that may come through such a thing. One cannot calculate how much is possible for a few determined souls gathered together in a common purpose. All this reminds me of a poem I wrote once some years ago. There is a point inside that is the loving exactitude of what we seek. It is the safe, encircling arm of the complete. We are shapeshifters. Ah, but if. Dress me in nothing and I will shine. For as much as we are vulnerable, yearning, and confused, and stand as the sum of ridiculous quest, when we are in love, we are at our best. I've begun to miss the company of the readers, even though I've never met them. I don't know what the chances are, given the times, that some reunion is possible, but I keep the thought close to my heart. Sometimes in bed I lay dreaming about light-filled rooms, rooms lit with love and companionship, people talking, dancing, making music, working on their projects, picnicking beside the lake, picnicking beside the lake, you know, it seems so real, and I believe it is. I know that reality awaits us at some further reach, and I do look forward to that day. I have suddenly run out of things to say as my mind drifts off in the into the creation of images related to what I was just talking about. I often think about how much I'd like to have a Hobie cat by that lake, you know, and just go sailing in the wind. You know, I'd enjoy something like that. Well, as ever, we've reached the conclusion of one more broadcast, and I'll see you next week if there is one. In between times, seek out your heart for companionship, and know that every heart is joined at that place from which love itself emerges. I believe the Sufis call it the Kutub. That's our spiritual Skype, and we're all online every day. That said, aloha and aru.
You can see him in the morning when the sun is.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.